Rory, Scotland, tomorrow, Mustang. And I was like, let's go. They turned me down. I remember I did the audition, did the screen test, and they wrote back and said, basically, thanks, but no thanks. And I was like, just devastated. It's Top Gear for real. It's like helicopters flying around following me as I'm driving through Scotland. It was brilliant. I love Fifth Gear, and I wanted to do Fifth Gear because I wanted to be one of the few people, including your good self, who did both.
Have you ever met Jeremy Clarkson?
Yes. I got a call from Auto Trader saying, listen, we're going to revamp our YouTube channel. We love your stuff. Would you come and talk to us?
Top Gear or Fifth Gear? Welcome to Fueling Around. I'm Vicky Butler-Henderson.
And I'm Dave Vitti, bringing you the very best in motortainment every single week. Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Now, please don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press follow on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now then, it is with great pleasure to introduce you to this week's special guest. He is a motoring journalist. He has been on Top Gear and Fifth Gear. Like somebody else in here. But he is the YouTube director for Auto Trader. He is Mr. Rory Reed.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Thanks, you.
Sir. Thanks for having me.
Oh, listen, thank you very much for coming in. It's a pleasure to meet you. As Vicky says, you know, an extraordinary career thus far in many, many things that you've done. Currently YouTube director for Auto Trader. And that's so right, yeah. Things continue to go from strength to strength. Would you say, though, that having been in the Top Gear stable, and obviously that being a life-changing moment professionally,
yeah,
that you owe your big break to Jeremy Clarkson punching a producer?
100%. As bad as it sounds, I think that was a pivotal moment, wasn't
yeah
it? Because if he hadn't swung that right hook, or whatever punch it was, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
A left uppercut jab?
Could have been a combo, I'm not sure. But, you know, like, would we be in this room today? Maybe, if the universe aligned in different ways. But yeah, that was the moment that kind of changed pretty much everything.
Absolutely.
It set my life on a different trajectory. Although weirdly, all my mates kind of expected it to happen anyway.
Really?
Literally, I'd go to work doing my car videos and stuff like that. And they would all say to me, when are you going to be on Top Gear? And I'd always say, when Jeremy Clarkson resigns or dies, you know?
Yeah.
But it turned out that didn't need to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just steak gate needed to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Just needed to get hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What films were you doing before then? What was your outlet?
So directly before Top Gear, I was working on a small YouTube channel called Recombu. Recombu is a portmanteau of read, compare, buy. And it started out originally as a mobile phone site and YouTube channel. And the owner wanted me to come on board and set up a cars specific kind of offshoot of that. So I was doing Recombu Cars, which was a car YouTube channel doing reviews and things like that. Before that, I was doing car tech at a company called CNET.
Mm-hmm.
And CNET is this big American corporation, and they enter the UK market doing consumer tech reviews. And I started out doing like tech reviews at CNET. And then one day I was like, can I do cars? And they said, no. And I went, come on, just one day a week, 2 days a week? And they went, go on then. If you can make it work, go ahead. So I tried to call up a bunch of car manufacturers saying, can you send me a car for review? And all of them said no.
Yeah.
So I'm going off on a bit of a tangent.
No, it's good.
You need to earn your stripes to get the cars.
So I hired a car. I hired a Toyota Prius from like Enterprise or something. Did a review on it, did a video, and it went nuts, got loads of views. And then I called up every other manufacturer and said, Toyota sent me this car, so you've got to send me stuff now. And they all went, okay.
Fake it till you make it, baby.
There you go.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. You know, everybody's got their story, because there isn't one path to get into anything, you know,
right.
Is it? And I think all of us can look back in whatever we've done and say that there was a moment of fortuity and luck and meeting the right people and doing the right thing at the right time. It's funny, actually, though, that you say that your friends were sort of saying years ago, when are you going to be on Top Gear? And perhaps not appreciating how difficult and how elite that would be to get there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because it's not like just suddenly becoming on TV and doing cars. You're playing for the top team, aren't you?
We're elite, Vicky.
Hey. but it is the elite. It's the ultimate, isn't it? You know, and I genuinely feel forevermore it will be, really.
I think, you know, you make a good point. I also think you make your own luck in a lot of ways. I think the one thing that a lot of people have in common who do maybe go further than other people is that they take the opportunities that are in front of them. Mm. So you can ask permission from someone, and if they say no and you don't say, but I'm going to do it anyway, or figure out a path, then you're not going to progress and take that next step. So whenever anyone asks me, how do I get into this industry? Mm. I always say, just do it. Like whatever it takes, even if it's a really weird path or it seems difficult, just do something, build on it. And when your break comes, you'll put the work in already so that you're able to prove that you belong there. So when Top Gear called, I had already put the work in for them to say, he's got that back catalogue, he's got that experience, that desire.
Yeah.
Maybe we should give him a shot.
And plus the other thing, as you say, is that yes, everybody owes their success to an extent to an element of luck. But you've then got to play that moment. Yeah. You know, you get that break, but then it's up to you to actually play it in the right way, you know, because that's almost where the journey starts, isn't it?
100%.
What was that first day like on Top Gear? And then I'm going to ask you your first day on Fifth Gear as well. Because they'll be mighty different.
First day on Top Gear, I think there's so many different first days. There's the first shoot that I did.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, even before that, the audition that I did. And then there's the first studio day as well. And they're all really big firsts.
Yeah, they are big firsts.
So the first, the audition. So I sent in an audition tape, but the screen test, the first screen test, where you rock up to the to Dunsfold and they hand you the keys to a car and they say, you've got to drive around the track and deliver some lines.
Yeah.
And there are cameras already set up in the
cameras
car.
Cameras all set up. Yeah. You've got cameras trackside. And there's no one in the car with you. You're on your own.
It's all on you.
With your nerves and your feelings. And you set off and you deliver the lines. And they gave me 20 minutes to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished all my lines in probably 5 minutes.
And then Mr. Efficiency.
And then I was like, I radioed it. I picked up the radio and went, I'm done. Can I stay out for a bit longer? Because I've got more time. And they went, okay. So I just literally started just messing about, just like drifting and stuff like that. Just enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
And like ad-libbing about what I was feeling and just giving that extra little sauce on top of what they expected anyway. And just like trying to make the most of the moment. So that was a cool day. The next cool day was my first film that I did, which was a Ford Mustang shoot in Scotland.
Just you or with other presenters?
That was just me. That was Chris Evans was meant to do that, but he cancelled the day before and went, I can't do it for some,
showbiz reasons.
Showbiz reasons. Yeah. I think it was family reasons, to be fair. And they went, Rory, Scotland, tomorrow, Mustang. And I was like, let's go. And then, off you go. And then suddenly, it's Top Gear for real. It's like helicopters flying around following me as I'm driving through Scotland. It was brilliant. And then the first studio day was probably the most nerve-wracking because you got humans, you got like 1,000 audience members.
You got eyeballs looking at you.
Yeah, and they're like, who is this guy?
Mm. What does he know about cars?
Exactly, judging.
Yeah.
And that was tough. But we got through it and I just tried to enjoy every moment of it. It wasn't all like, you know, flowers and rainbows. A lot of it was tough, especially because the show was under so much scrutiny at the time as well and everybody wanted you to fail.
It was a real moment of change, wasn't it? At the time when you came in, you know, this was taking over from a huge legacy.
Yeah.
And this was possibly the biggest change in its history. But in terms of your own audition and path, it wasn't straight away though, was it? Because didn't you initially get knocked back and then had to convince them again with a further tape?
Yeah, definitely. So they turned me down. I remember I did the audition, did the screen test. And they took ages and it was like, come on, what's happening? And I sent an email saying, have you got any news yet? And they wrote back and said, basically thanks, but no thanks. And I was like, just devastated after getting so far.
Yeah.
I think I was down to like the last three people or something.
And just that long wait.
It was devastating. And I remember texting my mate, said, I haven't got it. And he went, change their minds. And I was like, what are you on about?
Mm.
And I sort of ignored it. And then I thought, No, he's right. He's changed their minds. Because if you got that close, like what could I have done something a bit different?
Yeah, it's not like you're miles away from whatever they feel they want.
Yeah, I felt like there's something there, but I just need to convince them that, you know, I was the right person for it. So I wrote back and I said, what was it that I didn't do correctly? What did you want to see that I haven't shown? And they went, it's not that. It's just that everyone that we've tested was really good. But you're all really good, and we just can't decide on any of you. So we decided basically to go for none of you.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and I was like, "That's great information."
That
Cause,
is
because everyone's because what I realized was everyone did the same test, the same screen test, the same studio test on the track in the studio, but that's all they saw. So I've got to give them something else. So this is the point where I rang up Rolls Royce and I begged them for a Ghost Series 2, and I did this spoken word poetry review of this car, just to showcase like my writing, I guess, because no one had ever done this as far as I was aware, like a spoken word poetry review on a car, and just to showcase my creativity and my writing, and also presenting as well, and just giving a flavor that they hadn't seen from anyone else, and I sent that to them, and they gave me the job the same day.
I was going to say, the other thing with that though, Rory, is and not taking anything away from it, and with the greatest respect, but you know, not taking anything away from the writing or what you delivered or what you shot, etc., but I guess the most important thing in all of that was it just demonstrated your hunger.
Yeah, 100%.
It demonstrated the fact that you weren't going to take no for an answer.
That's it.
You've got this close. Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, from a career point of view, who's the mate of yours who said convince them otherwise?
Yeah.
Paul Monckton.
Because Paul, you know, in many ways, Paul changed your life, didn't he?
Paul did, 100%.
With that advice.
What does Paul do for a living?
Paul is a tech journalist. He's a writer.
Oh, is he?
So he's one of the ones who's always saying, when are you going to be on Top Gear?
Yeah, yeah.
But like really meaning it and expecting it.
God, well done you for using your creativity as well and not listening to no means no.
Yeah.
When Fifth Gear came calling, you didn't say no.
I didn't.
What was that first day like when you joined the other side?
I know, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because they sort of exist on almost two different ends of the spectrum. There's this like hugely entertainment based behemoth that is Top Gear, and then you've got Fifth Gear, which is slightly more kind of sensible and everyman.
Yeah, and definitely on a no helicopters on Fifth Gear.
No helicopters. No. but it was great. No, because I love Fifth Gear, and I wanted to do Fifth Gear because I wanted to be one of the few people, including your good self, who did both.
Yeah.
Because they're just such iconic shows.
Yeah.
That I just wanted to be a part of
both
of them.
Yeah.
And it was a great pleasure working with you guys and ticking that box.
What was your first day for Fifth Gear?
We did a test at Millbrook with, I've forgotten what cars it was now, but it was one of those kind of group test things where we all poke around a car.
Yeah.
And I earned the nickname, perception that I was obsessed with boot sizes because I would memorize the exact literage of every single boot, and also obsess about the shapes of the boot as well.
Here comes the boot guy.
Yeah, exactly. Karun Chandok wouldn't let that lie, but it was fun. It was more relaxed working
definitely
on Fifth
Gear. Relaxed. Yeah, there was.
I think I enjoyed Fifth Gear more on a human level because there was all this weight of expectation and pressure from the Top Gear side, and then going to do Fifth Gear, it just felt like just a nice crowd to hang out with.
I think you
get that. You get that impression, you know, as an audience when you watch it. It feels like it feels quite effortless, and I mean that in the greatest sort of way. Like the pressure is off, and you're just enjoying yourself,
and
just doing what you do best.
Definitely, definitely.
Fueled by passion, that's the key.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, when you're given space to just be yourself and shine on your own terms, I think that goes a long way on screen.
Yeah,
And it comes across. And when you got someone like Vicky next to you, who is like You're brilliant. I love you, by the way.
Love you too.
It makes it easier.
Absolutely. Well, listen, why do you think I'm sitting over here? You know, I wouldn't be doing this on my own.
Having a love fest. Let's rock.
In terms of, it was 3 years that you spent at Top Gear, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2016 to 19, something like that, before you obviously moved to where you are now. Mm-hmm. Was the decision to leave Top Gear a difficult one? Was the Auto Trader offer too good to turn down? Or was it indeed correct on both of those fronts? You know, was it tough to leave?
It was tough to leave in one sense. I think, you know, so what happened to me on Top Gear was that they had ideas for me specifically about how I would exist within the Top Gear universe.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to focus on more electric cars. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to become the EV kind of
the
guy.
The EV guy, yeah.
I do like EVs, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's not really who I am.
Didn't want to be labelled with that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're more of a boot guy.
I'm a boot guy.
Yeah.
Because it's part of it, exactly.
Can I be the boot leeches yeah, guy, exactly. please?
So I was like, okay. But the other thing was I was working on this online series for Top Gear at the same time, and I'd put in countless hours of, you know, producing this content, ready for it to be released, and they were just sitting on it for so long, and the cars that I had tested were kind of going out of production
before it even aired.
Yeah. I was like, well, I'm doing all this work, I'm they're sitting on my content, it's not going out, and then I got a call from Auto Trader saying, listen, we're going to revamp our YouTube channel, we love your stuff, would you come and talk to us? And I was like, no. No, I said, oh, let's talk. So they kind of showed me the vision, which was basically, you know, we'd love for you to share your vision and tell us what a YouTube channel might look like with you at the helm. And they were really open and responsive to my ideas. And they just said, if you're ready to do it, let's do it. And So I said bye to the BBC and went to Auto Trader.
And with Auto Trader now, you can create films and they don't sit on a shelf. You almost can't get enough.
Yeah, the exact opposite. Yeah,
so tell us what you're filming and the team behind it all.
Okay, so because Auto Trader is, I think, all things to all people in terms of you can buy anything on the platform. You got vans, you got bikes, you got cars, all different types of cars.
Farm machinery,
definitely. We try to provide, we don't do farm machinery on the channel, but we try to provide a variety of cars that, you know, everyone's interested in some way. So it'd be anything from a Renault Twingo 1 week to an Aston Martin DB12S the next week.
Yeah.
And we're kind of lucky that our audience kind of resonates with both ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So we get success on both sides. See, what it looks like for me on a week-by-week basis is I'm normally traveling somewhere abroad, always on a plane, landing somewhere where there's a launch happening, new car gets revealed, they give me the keys, I head off with my camera crew, mm-hmm. we do a film and then come back, and within 48 hours to 6 weeks, depending on the length of the embargo, we have a video up on, mm-hmm. on YouTube. And it's kind of rinse and repeat. It's pretty relentless on YouTube. You've got to keep feeding the beast. Mm. It looks glamorous, but it's not, is it, Vicky? We were in Barcelona last week. Right?
Yeah, it was lovely, but you don't see Barcelona.
No.
You just get work through your script, get your script done, get your shots done, wake up early the next morning, get on the road, get those ups and buys.
Yeah, and then on to the next one.
Exactly.
But I mean, it pays dividends though, because, you know, if you don't mind me saying, I mean, the films look fantastic. I mean, they look like they could be on Top Gear or something of that. And I can, you know, only say that as the greatest compliment, because it's proper premium content.
Yeah, that's the aim, really, to make it like look and feel as if a lot of thought and effort has gone into it. So that's what we aim for. And we're lucky that the audience has kind of resonated with it.
Yeah.
And we got a lively cohort of watchers, mm-hmm. nearly 1.8 million subscribers. Subscribe if you haven't already, also Trader UK. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's honestly, what you and I do is amazing and I can't fault it at all. And I feel lucky to be, you know, to do it.
Yeah,
so, it's a dream job, isn't it?
It really, really is a dream job.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you as well, sort of in terms of, well, both of you really, as sort of former alumni of Top Gear, without obviously talking about the incident which ultimately led to the program going off the air. But how do you feel now in terms of the fact that that institution is no more? Is that something that, that makes you sad?
Do you want to go first, Vicky?
I always think that the door is open for it, and I don't think anyone has ever said that it has done and dusted.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you share that?
I think it will come back.
Do you?
Yeah, one day. I think enough time needs to pass. Mm-hmm. Enough wounds need to heal.
So this is literally a rest rather than an end?
I mean, I can't speak for the BBC, but I think the brand is so big and powerful and has such weight behind it that I think it almost has to come back in some shape or form.
I agree. I mean, the magazine has, you know, kept going, and it's got a very strong online presence as well. So
it's a huge brand. They're not letting it go in terms of the magazine, the YouTube channel. So, yeah, I think they just need to spend time letting people kind of forget the drama that happened,
and then
come back with something strong. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what that will look like. Mm-hmm. Because I think the world's changed. I'm not sure if you could have Clarkson, Hammond and May come back right now and do what they did before in today's world. Mm-hmm. I think times have changed. So I think whatever it ends up being in the future, if it does come back, it will be probably quite different.
I think the world's changed even since the last three. I mean, never mind Clarkson, Hammond and May. I think the world's changed even since sort of Flintoff, McGuinness and Harris, you know, in many ways. And as you say, you know, the world's changed a lot in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. So when it does eventually come back, what will the audience want? We wait and see.
They want Rory and me. That's what they want.
There you go.
You're onto something there.
That's an official come and get me appeal, isn't it?
Rory, please, may I take you right back to the very beginning and your earliest petrol-related memories that gave you the passion for cars?
Yeah. Do you know what? I had two passions when I was younger. One was technology. So I loved gadgets and I loved cars as well. But my big one when I was sort of like, you know, 10 years old or whatever was tech. I used to play a lot of video games, like car video games, basically. And I used to program my own games and stuff. So that was one passion. And then the cars thing was difficult because I didn't have that many people around me who had nice cars that I could accidentally kind of fuel that passion with. It was only people like my granddad. He had a Vauxhall Carlton. And I thought this was the best thing ever because it had like electric seats, it had electric windows. Yeah. I thought it was like an S-Class or something.
Oh yeah, it's a big beast.
Yeah, because it was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And quiet and comfortable. So I think from my perspective, I didn't have anyone kind of spoon feeding me the passion. I had to discover it on my own.
Yeah.
And one way I did that was with Max Power magazine and things like that. And I'd, you know, my one of my big memories is just having loads of photos, posters on my wall of supercars, and I always had a passion for the Chevy Corvette because it was all these posters had top trumps on them, and the Corvette was the cheapest but still had almost the best 0-60. So I was like, if one day I'm going to own one of these, and I remember just spending lots of time buying loads of really cars, hoping that I could buy them, sell them, and upgrade to something else and work my way to a Corvette. Never quite happened. But
And in terms of, you know, passing your test, were you a first time guy? And, you know, can you remember, you know, we always say, don't they, those immortal words, you've passed, you know, can you remember that moment on the day of your test?
I can remember. I mean, I was driving before that.
I mean, obviously on private property,
Land,
farm tracks like.
But yeah, passed my test first time. I think I got two minor flaws. One was being too hesitant, pulling out of the test centre.
Yeah.
And then I saw him make a note.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, he thinks I'm being too slow here. And then the next one was being too gung-ho. So that was cool though.
Somewhere in the middle, Mr. Reed.
Yeah, exactly, passed my test first time. Quite happy with that.
Where did you go on your first solo travel? To the shops? So an errand for mum?
I can't even remember because it was, I feel like I was on the road so much anyway, but probably to the supermarket or something like that.
Some nonsensical trips. Like, mum, do you need more cat food? No, I'm fine. Yeah. Of course you do, I'm going.
Do you know, one thing I do remember is picking up my mate and saying, I've passed my test. do you want to go for a drive? And we went somewhere private, and I gave him a driving lesson.
Mm. Oh, jeez. Confidence.
He promptly crashed the car.
Right.
We're still mates, and the car is fine. It was, yeah.
This isn't Moncton again, is it?
No,
it's not. Right. Okay.
Moncton!
What was the first car that you bought?
It was a hand-me-down, Vicky. So the first car I had was a hand-me-down. Yep. It was a Ford Focus Ford Fiesta Mark II, mm-hmm. 1 litre. It was green or blue. It was kind of one of these washed out greeny blue colours,
yeah,
but mostly rust coloured. Mm. And that was the thing that got me around mostly. Yeah. And then I moved on to a variety of no less rubbish, but no less charismatic cars either. So my next one was a Volkswagen Polo.
Sweet.
B Reg. Long estate shape.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that was a Mark II. I also had a Ford Escort XR3.
Oh, spicy.
Not the XR3i.
I know.
No injection.
Nice. Yeah, but that was. I mean, what sort of age are you with an XR3 then?
So this is all from like 17, 18, 19.
Okay, I mean, that's a lot of car at that age. Oh, yeah. Or certainly at the time it was.
Do you know what it was? Adrian Flux.
Ah, there you go. You know, sort out a quote for you.
There you go. Had to get that plug in. No, but it was so hard to get insurance. But there were these kind of, you know, brokers and things like that,
yeah,
that could sort you out.
Amazing.
So yeah, XR3, had that for a bit. One of my worst cars, but also best, was the Yugo Zastava 45.
Oh my gosh, the Yugo.
Yeah,
Yugo. Yeah.
I used to love that car. It looked horrible. The paint was terrible. It was like a red fading orangey color, but I put an exhaust from an XR2 on it. No, from a Beetle. I put a Beetle exhaust on the back of it,
yeah,
and it was just so loud and obnoxious, and actually quite quick as well.
Was it?
Yeah.
4-speed or 5?
It was a 4-speed, but it had a K&N air filter on it as well.
Oh, spicy.
So it was quite, yeah.
GQ
air. Yeah, yeah, it was good.
Living the max power dream.
Yeah. Then I moved on to two cars that I really wanted. One was an 8-valve Vauxhall Astra GTE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 8-valve was good, but then what I really wanted was a
16-valve. Mm.
So got the 16-valve digital dash.
Digital dash. Everyone with a digital dash thought that they were Knight Rider, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole point, is effectively, I've got a car that is some way inspired by Kit.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what? Now you've got such modern dashes that they're all so digital. Everyone's now like, oh, I could do with an analog now.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me old school dials.
Old school, yeah. But the 16 valve was brilliant. Also modified, air filter, exhaust a lot. But the problem with it was I bought it off a guy and he didn't tell me this at the time, but the brakes were broken. Like there was something wrong with the brakes, which meant that whenever you engaged ABS, the brakes would, instead of just locking and releasing quickly, they would just release completely.
Wowza.
So I discovered this braking hard as I pulled up towards the junction, ABS kicked in, brakes released, and I went straight across the junction.
Oh,
so it was a nasty potential accident. But no one could ever fix it for me. So I had to drive around this problem. And I learned how to get really good on the brakes from that, because everyone relies on ABS, but I never had to rely on ABS.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Because ABS meant an accident, basically.
Yeah.
So that car taught me a lot.
That's fantastic. I love it. And a front-wheel drive car, because most people learn with a rear-wheel drive car about driving dynamics.
Yeah, yeah.
But you navigated your way around a front-wheel drive and no brakes.
Yeah, taught me a lot about lift-off oversteer as well.
Nice.
Well, listen.
And handbrake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we continue the car journey, because I want to find out what follows that, quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So where do we go next, Mr. Reed, after the
16 valve?
We go to a variety of car meets, like attended by the max power generation. So cruises.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, rocking up to cruises in your
Thurrock, Lakeside.
There you go. They always felt so dangerous at the time, these places.
Yeah.
it was a bit scary. But I had fun being a bit of a hooligan, tearing around at these car cruises. But after the GTE 16 valve, I went to an E36 BMW.
Grown up.
Nice.
Which was convertible.
Amazing.
It was a really, really nice car.
Yeah.
Had a lot of fun in that. Rear wheel drive as well. So learned a bit about car dynamics and things like that. And I spent about 4 or 5 years in that car. That was really special. But then my car history is all about just like really terrible cars, and I had multiple of them at the same time. So all these cars I've listed, I never really sold them and moved them on. I kind of had them all at the same time.
Accumulated.
Oh, I see.
With the logic that when one broke, I'd get into another one. Mm. And I'd drive that around.
Fair enough.
While I fixed the other one. And then if that broke, I'd jump into the other one. So I was just like going from really terrible car to really terrible car, just rotating. And I always wanted to be the guy that had a car, because in college at the time, that's how you got friends and girls and things like that, because you'd be the guy who'd like take people on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It sets you above, your contemporaries, doesn't it, if you've got a car?
Would you like to go on the bus with me to dinner, or no. Can I come
I'll
pick you up?
I want to jump in my Yugo.
I'll take the bus. Thanks, Rory. what is the motoring itch that you've still got to scratch? I mean, I know so many amazing things, but for you personally, to buy and spend money on.
Yeah, I spent a long time looking for the perfect Chevy Corvette. Uh-huh. Didn't find one. See, I wanted a C3, which is I think it was like 1969. And I could never find one that wasn't completely broken. So that is an itch. I think I'd love a Corvette of some type. C2 or C3. Any Corvette, really. I think that would be, because I had the car on my wall.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to go kind of full circle from having a Vette on the wall as a kid to having one on the drive. But it makes such little sense for us to have.
Well, this was going to be my next point. You know, for somebody who spends their time flying around the world and driving and reviewing other people's cars, what is in the personal Rory Reid sort of car collection currently?
Currently, nothing that interesting, to be honest with you. My baby was a Ford Mustang, 5-liter V8 S550, which is a brilliant car. I had that is the first car I drove on Top Gear for a film. And the car I drove in that film was a yellow coupe. And I fell in love with it on the shoot. I criticized it a lot on the shoot, but I fell in love with it. I thought, I want
it has
that
character.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went and bought one.
Yeah.
And I kept that car for probably a good 5 years. And I sold it recently, but that was my baby. But apart from that, I've got an old Range Rover L320.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my dailies. I've got a Tesla Model Y for the family car. Had BMW X5, Mercedes GLE.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but nothing. Yeah, that's the thing. When you're doing the job that we do, it makes such little sense to actually, invest in something that you really love, because you never get time to drive it.
No.
And that's the reason why I sold the Mustang, because it was parked up on my drive for over a year, literally.
Yeah.
And I just never drove it. And I was like, someone else should enjoy this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I sold it. And 3 weeks later, I got a Facebook message saying, are you the Rory Reid with the yellow Mustang? And I went, yeah. And he went, my wife bought your car and crashed it. Where'd you get your front bumper from?
Because
custom front bumper, custom body kit. And she'd binned it. And I was like.
Or had he binned it and he was just dissing his wife?
Yeah, maybe. Potentially. Maybe. So, but that hurts though, isn't it? Especially when you've looked after something so well and it's been cherished, clearly.
Yeah.
And then it's gone somewhere and maybe cherished not quite so much. That hurts.
Never crashed. And then suddenly, But that's the Mustang that, a lot of people, they like the appeal of a Mustang because it's powerful and rear-wheel drive and noisy and stuff. And then try driving one in winter all over the shop.
Yeah.
But my car collection is basically press cars these days.
Yeah.
Because that's you have to keep driving cars and keep producing films, and you just get no time to actually enjoy the cars that that you would curate yourself.
Yeah, and I suppose also, when you are back home from a trip, you've just been away to Barcelona driving cars around the hills of there or wherever you might be in Portugal or Spain or wherever it is. Mm. I suppose when you do come home, you probably just want something which is a workhorse to go to the supermarket and back or, go out with the family or something. So
Definitely. It's
not about getting that adrenaline rush, is it, from something kind of like hot and sexy, because that's what you're doing job wise.
Yeah, yeah. And you get that as well. You get that from press cars being sent to you at home.
Yeah.
I haven't mentioned it, but I've got an Audi RS Q8 long term. I wish, you know, you get these cars to test on a long term basis to figure out.
And long term, for those that don't know, is I mean, are we talking a few months? Are we talking a year? I mean,
it can be, it's normally a few months.
Right.
So the idea being that you create multiple pieces of content on it and learn to live with it and find the flaws and the foibles of this vehicle. So you've got to you keep testing. It's never, work doesn't stop. You don't drive for pleasure, I find. I mean, it's enjoyable, but it's a job.
Always receiving bits of information when we're driving.
Yeah.
But every mile I have, I take enormous pleasure from it.
but that's good though, isn't it? The fact that after all of these years, and I mean this to both of you, the fact that you're not complacent about it, and you still clearly love what you do, which is great. You know, it's not kind of like, oh, I'm going to go and test that this week. You know, it's like you genuinely love what you do.
It is pretty special. What has been a standout car for you, sort of on your Auto Trader shenanigans? Is there one car that's that surprised you in a good way or bad?
Ooh, I think I get surprised by a lot of cars, but I mean, the ones that that set my pulse racing the most, probably Lamborghinis. I don't know how you feel about Lambos, but
I'm Urus girl.
Are you?
Oh, give me an Urus.
Yeah,
Urus. I mean, I love them all Lamborghinis.
Yeah,
I love Ferraris too.
Yeah, I'm a Lambo guy through and through. So just, from the V10 Hurricane, even now with the V8 Temerario.
Yeah.
They're so violent and exciting that they're a go-to favorite of mine. The Aventador SVJ is probably the one that kind of sticks to mind.
Because,
whenever I drive that car, it is such an intoxicating kind of experience. I always try to take passengers when I get a Lambo, just so they can experience particularly what a launch in a Lambo feels like. So I'll drive around, I'll park up somewhere and I'll go, right, just strap in and feel this. And then I'll just do launch control, and the look on their face, usually of terror, is, I just get a kick out of that.
I do exactly the same, because you feel that you don't get a Lamborghini every day of the week. So to be able to share it is exactly right. I've been down my road, knocked on the door of people who I know have got kids and said, look, I've got a Lambo, would you like to come and sit in it? And it is a sharing experience.
Yeah, it's so good. Lambo, I love Lambos. I do the same thing with electric cars, though. We mentioned earlier about me not being the EV guy, but the acceleration on those is...
Yeah, well, funny enough, I was just thinking that when you said that, in terms of just that sort of like, sort of push back in the seat moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they are ridiculous, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know?
So I love, like Vicky said, just sharing the experience of a special car with someone else. I'm not precious about it. If I see someone... even looking at the car at a petrol station, I'll just say, jump in, have a look.
Yeah.
Let them take a look at it. If I drive past a kid at a bus stop pointing at the car,
knocking
into neutral, rev it. Although I did that once and I revved it and the kid burst into tears and his mum just said, "You absolute..." And Dad, you won't have to beep it. But she swore at me and I was like, sorry, I don't know. I thought he wanted it. But,
do you know which car it was? Can you remember which car you
were in? Was a Lambo as well.
Was it?
That was an SVJ. So he's probably scarred for life, this kid. But I don't know, I thought he wanted to hear it.
Yeah, mummy, the bootleader guy just revved his Lambo at me. In terms of the day job then, Rory, and you know, there's a huge amount of content that you're creating every month and every year. How does that come about? Is that something that, you know, obviously as YouTube director, are you sort of mapping out over the course of the year what you want to achieve, or is it something which is largely driven by press schedules of manufacturers and release dates and stuff?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Usually you're dictated to in terms of the availability of cars, in terms of the launch calendar.
Yeah.
So BMW are launching this in this month. They'll come and invite us to that launch.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps us a lot, we find, to be active on the launch circuit, so we can get early access, so we can show people what the cars are like as soon as we're able to.
Yeah.
But in parallel with that, we're also creating our own bespoke shoots.
Mm.
So I think we mentioned earlier we did an Aston Martin DB12S.
Video. So I watched it the other day. It was great.
Yeah, that was such a fun car, brilliant car.
Mm.
So off the back of that, well, actually, in, in parallel, I knew the launch was happening, but I said to them, once the launch has happened, can I get one back to the UK? Because I want to put that up against a Bentley Continental GT or other equivalent rival. So you're planning your own shoots at the same time as the manufacturers are planning their releases. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's a bit of both. And it takes up a lot of headspace to kind of keep up with it all. But got a pretty good team and we get by.
So of all the adventures that you've created, what do you think is your standout one?
Oh, we went to South Africa to test. We've done a couple of shoots in South Africa. South Africa is such a special place. But it's we did a Toyota Land Cruiser, the 250 Prado, in South Africa. And me and one of my co-presenters, Alex, me and her just drove through South Africa, through Johannesburg, doing off-roading and... we went through a wildlife reserve and just driving past lions and tigers and chatting to people and things like that and testing the car in an environment that was really challenging, but also really beautiful as well. We came out with a really like beautiful looking film and it just felt like, you know, heartwarming and nice to be able to do that. So that was very special. While we were in South Africa as well, we tested a G-Wagon against something called an Mbombe. And an Mbombe, you've driven an Mbombe.
Yeah, this is ringing a bell.
Yeah, the big military
things. Yes, yeah, yeah.
And is that a brand or a model or?
That's the model. So the company is called Paramount and they build the Mbombe, which is like an armored personnel carrier, basically. So we did the G-Wagon, which is a big car against a huge.
Did it make the G-Wagon look small?
Oh, yeah. Tiny, really tiny.
We'd be like coming up to its sort of wheel arches kind of thing.
Yeah, but we did a race, G-Wagon versus Mbombe. And I was driving the Mbombe and we had these attack dogs in the back and not soldiers, but they're like game wardens, basically, who go around discouraging poachers, should we
say. Right, okay.
so they're armed. Yeah. They got these attack dogs and they were all in the back of this Mbombe, like, I don't know, seven or eight of them. And we're just driving around the this kind of race course that we'd fashioned. That was really good.
Mega.
And then we towed a plane. I called up Lanseria Airport in Johannesburg and said, you got any planes I could tow? And they went, all right. So we rocked up to the airport and they got this plane out.
Brilliant.
I think it was a 737 or something. And then we towed the plane with the G-Wagon. And then once that worked, we towed the G-Wagon and the plane with the Mbombe.
Brilliant.
Wow.
So it was just a lot of fun. And going back to the point of trying to create your own bespoke films, that was a real highlight. And feel really lucky to be able to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, love it.
I love the fact that, as you say, you know, in that sort of position, not only do you get to present and drive and write, but also you're sort of mapping out this content, which is wonderful. You know, no wonder you're so happy where you are.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know,
I think with Top Gear, you are fortunate to do some really amazing things. But it is very much collaborative, and not that Auto Trader isn't collaborative, there are so many different layers to go through before the BBC say, yes, sign that off.
Where you're like, this is a great idea. Can we do it? You know, do the dates work?
Yeah.
Great, let's do it.
Exactly. You know? It's not easy to do, but it's easier to dream up something a bit silly and then go away and say, right, we're going to do it now. And we haven't got to wait for
someone to sign off a budget or health and safety.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We just go... Yeah, it's safe. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
Well, listen, talking of something a little bit silly, before we get into final question territory, Rory, we need you to take part in our quick fire round. It's called 0 to 60 because you will have approximately 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many quick fire questions as you possibly can, right? We haven't given you any prior notice on this, so you just got to relax and use your mind to get as many as you possibly can.
Pressure's on.
And we will top them all up at the end, and hopefully you'll have a grand score, which will make you the envy of your... automotive contemporaries.
Have you got a leaderboard?
We are getting a leaderboard.
Should get a leaderboard. I'll be right at the bottom.
No. I mean, you can see where this is possibly inspired from. You know? I mean, with a leaderboard and all of our guests ranked on there. Where could that have come from? Anyway, so it's called 0 to 60. Vicky, are you ready with your first question? I'm going to use the stopwatch here.
Ready?
Yes, I think so. So Rory Reid, if you're ready. Vicky Butler-Henderson, if you're ready.
I am
your
ready.
Time starts
in, good to go.
Now.
What did you want to be when you were little?
Astronaut.
Telly or YouTube?
YouTube.
Who would play you in Top Gear, the movie?
Oh, my God. I was going to say, I was going to say Idris Elba, but probably not. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, go on then. Yeah, Idris.
What's the best thing about working for Auto Trader?
I have trust. Trust.
Are there any manufacturers that won't lend you any cars?
Won't lend me any cars. No.
Have you ever met Jeremy Clarkson?
Yes.
What's your favourite character in Friends?
Chandler.
What's your go-to flavour of crisps?
Barbecue.
Top Gear or Fifth Gear?
Fifth Gear.
Name the coolest TV car of all time.
Eleanor.
On a bacon sandwich, red sauce or brown sauce?
Either, actually. No, red. Red.
Right, I'm doing time up on that
okay.
one.
Okay.
Right, so at the end of that, Rory Reid, you've scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm going to give you 12.
Double figures.
Double figures. 12 is a good score. It's a strong score.
That's that's 2 a second. No, wait. Sorry, 60. Ignore that. Edit that out. Yeah. Maths is not my strong
point.
It's
definitely not mine, so I'm not going to help you. I'm sorry,
I'm keeping completely quiet as well. Completely quiet.
Now then, my lovely, it is time for our final question. So this is your dream drive. So if you could paint the scenario for us, where are you? Who are you with? What are you listening to? But most importantly, what are you driving?
Wow. Again, totally unprepared for this question. But dream drive, I would probably have to be in something convertible because I think that adds so much to the character of a car. In the sense that if you're in a car with a nice sound, you hear it a lot more with the top down. You can also kind of engage with the surroundings a bit better with a drop top. So with that being said, I'm going to go with a Bentley Continental GT Speed convertible. Where would I go? I'd probably drive through the Alps, actually. In warm conditions,
yeah,
but with snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Look good on the helicopter shot, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. Switchbacks. Yeah. Going through the Alps, maybe kicking the back end a little bit out occasionally.
Cheeky.
And who would I take with me? I might take you, Vicky, actually. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like that would be...
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, what, should we take a crew as well and film it?
Would it be possible if I took a 911 GT3 convertible?
I'm going to stop this. I'm going to stop this now because I know exactly what you're both doing. Right? And I refer back to the previous conversation where you were saying that you were going to audition for Top Gear if it came back. And I know exactly what you're doing, right? And we can't have this on this show.
God, it writes itself.
It writes itself. And then, do you know what? In that beautiful moment, that just about calls close on this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux, as the UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
And a super huge thank you to our special guest this week, Mr. Rory Reid. Thank you, Rory.
Thank you, Vicky. Thank you, Dave.
No, it's been great. Thank you very much. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again next time. Bye-bye.